We are talking to the fifth generation owner of Omaha Steaks, Todd Simon. Wow, I hate to say it. In the midst of this crisis we're living through, what a great time for Omaha Steaks. You were already on this, right? Flash frozen, safely delivered to your door. Mm-hmm. You get an amazing amount of food that you can stock up in your freezer.
Well, that's right. I mean, we are experts in frozen food delivery, and we've been shipping great protein and meals and steaks, you know, directly to people's homes since the mid-50s. So we're already sort of set up and expert at it. So, you know, when people, you know, either stopped wanting to go to stores or when stores didn't have enough supply, we were ready to step in and really help our customer family make sure that they were able to stock up and have what they needed during this unfortunate moment.
And your quality is amazing. I just am amazed the amount you get for the price that you
yeah.
get, right? Because you actually have like stock up varieties now. Tell us about those.
That's right. So if you go to our website now, we're focusing a lot on stock up packages because what we're finding is that what our customers want is they want a big box with a lot of portions so they can get that in their freezer and so that they can make sure that they're doing great meals at home, but they're not kind of creating monotony, right? They really want variety. My wife now is cooking something different every night, looking for different recipes. So we've got these pre-packed stock-up boxes that are ready to ship now. They're filled with a huge variety of steaks, of premium poultry and pork. We've got no-work family meals for your slow cooker, your oven. We've got skillet meals. We've got side dishes. And we've got artisan desserts. And one of the things, you know, we've heard is that, you know, don't forget the sweets, right? People want to have something sweet to end the meal. So great food, cooked easily. One less problem that really people have to deal with right now is they're thinking about so many things that could potentially overwhelm them.
And Todd, can I just say, during this time of crisis, the Stephanie Miller Show so appreciates our sponsors because everyone's having a tough time. And let me just say, my listeners get the need to support my sponsors. You've been so loyal to us and they've been so loyal to you. And now it's a win-win-win for everybody. So thank you so much. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Stephanie in the box. And Todd, thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much. And please stay safe.
You too. Yeah.
Welcome to Amped Up with Proud Resister. This is progressive activist Ryan Knight. And our guest today is Adam Christensen. Adam is a candidate for Congress in Florida's 3rd Congressional District, and he's a small business owner. Adam, welcome to Amped Up.
Appreciate you having me.
Since this is your first time on the show, why don't you give us a little bit about your background and why you're running for Congress?
Yeah, so I actually grew up kind of right outside Indianapolis, Indiana, in one of the most conservative counties in the country, actually. I moved away when I was for college, went down to Tennessee and then out to Virginia, ended up at Hampton Sydney College in the middle of nowhere called Farmville. After college, I started two companies right out of college. I basically drove around the country trying to figure out where the best place in the country was to actually start a business. When I was in college, I had a company come to me and basically say, you know, we just had to pull $60,000 of this peppermint oil off the market because it was fake. It was fraudulent. How can we know in the future that we're not getting ripped off? And so basically, I spent about a year trying to figure out how to do that. And after about a year, I realized, you know, this might be bigger than just one company, the fraud that was going on in that industry. And so I drove around the country with a buddy, basically looking for incubators, small business incubators, to find to be able to start my first company, and actually landed up. I drove from Virginia Beach to Indiana to Tampa to Arkansas to California and then up to North Dakota and back, and ended up here in Gainesville, Florida. Basically packed up my life and started over right at that point. And started my first small business down here in Gainesville, Florida, at one of their incubators that was attached to the university. And basically, it was how to detect. We were detecting fraud. We're detecting people, suppliers, anybody who is trying to screw over anybody else, and making sure that you can put out the best product. And so, as I went through that, I realized that probably 60-70% of what I was seeing from even good companies was fraud. And I was like, you know what? This cannot just be, you know, just one industry. This has got to be a lot more. And so basically, that was about 4 years ago. Within that time, I've started another company as well, and we're just in the final processes of selling it. And after the last election, I just kind of looked around and I said, you know what? Like, my entire life I have lived, the only things that I've ever known was 9/11, 2008, the recession, the pandemic, basically everything that we have seen, I have seen simply because everything in my life, everything around me, every opportunity that I've had, I've gotten lucky. And I know there's a lot of people that didn't, but there was a system that I saw that I just could not understand. And so in January, I was looking around and basically at that point, like, you know what? This is the year. This is the year that, especially here in Central Florida, people are hurting a lot. And this is the year that people need to be able to feel some hope and have a future. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go help whoever it is that's running for Congress to take over this district, to take it back, to actually help people that are here. Because the people that live here in Gainesville and just outside of Gainesville, I think the average income's only like $18,000 to $20,000 here in Gainesville. And now, just outside of it in some of the rural parts, in places like Stark and Palatka, Hawthorne, it's even lower. And I didn't realize that until I started to really look into it. And I said, you know what? Those are the kind of people that I know, that I grew up with, the people who care about personal responsibility, who care, and they don't have a lot, but they do everything they possibly can to help their families survive and make sure that they can live. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to see what candidate it is that I can go help, that I can volunteer for, that I can back either financially or with my business or by volunteering or whatever. I'm going to help them win. And so I went and I looked, and I just didn't see anyone that I actually felt had the ability to give a vision for people like me. And at that point, I thought, you know what? What will it take to actually get on the ballot? What will it take to actually run for Congress? Because I don't know. And I don't think most people know. And so I looked it up, and it was basically you either go get 5,000 signatures, petitions, or you pay 10 grand. And my first response was, wait, you have to pay? You can pay to get on the ballot. You don't have to go out and actually talk to anyone, but you can just pay your way. Are you serious? And so right then I thought, you know what? What can I do at this moment in the next 2 weeks? How many petitions can I go out and get myself and see if what I believe and what I see and what people are telling me, if that actually is viable for somebody to run on? And so I went out, I took the puppy, you know, we got pictures up with his name's Pummel. He's a Pomsky puppy. He looks like a husky. He's 25 pounds, absolutely adorable. I took him out and within 2 weeks got 600 signatures myself.
There you go. Bring the dog is always, it's always a good fallback.
Look, man, half the people stop just to pet him, talk about him, and then they sign the petition. The other half actually care what you have to say.
Right. Well, I want to stop you real quick because you said something to me that's so interesting, that your background in the business world is fraud detection. Because in this climate with the amount of corruption right now in Washington, D.C., I can't think of a better qualification for Congress than someone who is a fraud detector. Right. I mean, that's what we have to do is root out all of this corruption and fraud in our government and this revolving door from big giant corporations and Wall Street to our Congress. You know, right now we are in the middle of one of the biggest crises we've ever had in this country. And our government has been slow to respond, right? Our government can't even get medical supplies to doctors and nurses in hospitals. And our government hasn't even gotten cash relief into the hands of the American people. And the reason for that is because our government has been captured by corporations and billionaires. So when you have a government that's sole function is to represent and work for the 1%, right? When then you have a crisis and actually the people need a government that works for them. Well, newsflash, when the government is so busy, you know, catering to these corporations and billionaires, it has no idea how to actually do anything for the people. And so that's kind of where we find ourselves now. Yes, Donald Trump is a huge part of it. But let's not pretend that there's not this systemic rot, right, in our political system. And so when I hear people like you bringing these fresh ideas and say you want to root out fraud, I'm like, sign me up.
So I can really only talk about my experience growing up when it comes to some of these things. Like I said, I grew up in Indiana. I grew up in one of the most conservative counties in the country. I ran a polling place at the age of, I think I was 18. It was the Obama and Romney election. And that polling place, we had 198 people vote for Mitt Romney and 2 people vote for Obama. Those 2 people were the people that were required by law to be at the polling place so the polling place could be open. And what I realized growing up and seeing that was
people weren't voting for Republicans or Democrats based purely on the fact that they were Republicans or Democrats. The people I know and I grew up with and in most conservative places, they don't think that either party cares whether or not they live right. or die. They do right. not think that anyone cares about them or their families or whether or not they can survive. And they believe that they have to do it themselves, that the government is not going to come in and save them. And they're just not. And what we're seeing now, especially here in rural Florida, is the same attitude where this is just exasperating the problems that we've already had. Speaking from my experience in doing, basically, I spend most of my day as almost a BS detector, almost like a fraud detector. Basically, I look at a product, somebody tells me what they think it is or what it's supposed to be, and I say, no, that's absolute crap. 90% of this is fake, and you just paid 5 to 6 times the amount you ever should have for that product. And what I realized was the best products on the market may not actually be the best products. The biggest companies do not sell the best products. They sell whatever they want, and as long as they package it, as long as they market it, as long as they make it look pretty or make it look shiny, people will buy it and think that it is good and that it is high quality and that it is the best thing out there. And the problem is you have companies that jack up the prices 10x and people believe simply because they see a brand or a name that it is better for them. And right. so what I have realized over the past 4 or 5 years, and especially since I started my business, was when you look at things like our healthcare industry, it's not a free market. And in fact, you have middlemen that are stealing our money. You have insurance yep. companies that 30% of everything that we pay for healthcare goes to an insurance company that does what? Nothing. They do nothing for us. They literally take our money as a middleman.
Well, they take our money and then they put out propaganda to tell us why we can't have Medicare for all.
Yeah,
right? That's essentially what they're spending our money on, right? To protect their industry.
That is literally what a middleman does. They yep. convince you that they are necessary. They convince you that the whole thing couldn't work without them. And they market that way to make you believe it. When in reality, if you just get rid of them, life is better. And I have been talking to people about this, especially here in rural Florida, where I basically say, look, the way that people market things, I don't believe anything is free. And nobody believes that anything is free. The question is, how are you going to market this? Most people around here, they don't want to pay taxes. They don't want anything given to them for free. They want to work for everything. And I say, you know what? You're right, and you have. In 2008, you invested in a bunch of failing companies who had screwed you over, and they came to you and they begged you to save them. And you took your hard-earned money and you invested in those companies, those banks, those industries, and you saved them. And every investor that I've ever talked to with my businesses that I've talked to asking, you know, if they want to invest, they have said within 3 to 5 years, I expect my money back times 2 or times 3. Well, newsflash, it's been 12 years since 2008. And in that time, our healthcare has gone up, our education prices have gone up, college, loans, our credit card rates, everything has gone up. And those companies that we saved 12 years ago, they've been more profitable and bigger than ever. Yep. And yet we haven't gotten a return on our investment. And so when I say, look, we're not asking for free college. What we are asking for is to simply get our money back that we already paid. And yep. right now you have been screwed over for years and you have been lied to for years and you've allowed middlemen to take your money. Because look, you pay taxes 2 times. You pay taxes once to the government and then you pay taxes to private corporations. And right now in the United States, you pay more in taxes overall times 2 compared to any other country. And yet you get half what you're supposed to get for it. And what That's I'm right. saying is I'm tired of paying taxes. I am tired of paying insurance companies, because the Supreme Court, when the ACA was passed, they said that premiums and deductibles are taxes. They labeled them as taxes, which means those premiums and deductibles that you pay, those are taxes.
Yeah.
And so we put in that framework.
Yeah. Well said. You know, one of the things that, you know, a lot of people frame the progressive agenda as radical. And one of the simple talking points I like to use is when I'm talking with voters is I just say things like, listen, do you want your tax dollars to continue to go to endless wars and welfare and bailouts for giant corporations? Or do you want your tax dollars to go to roads, bridges, schools, education, healthcare. You know, that's what it's about. Is our government working for corporations and billionaires, or are our tax dollars actually going back into our society, right? And it's a shift in thinking, because for so long, our government, again, it's been working better and better for those at the top. And when you just look at the statistics, income inequality in America, you talk about that our government bailed out the corporations after the financial crisis in 2008. They did. And 12 years later, and this pandemic, as we're heading into a recession, they bailed out corporations again. And you look, but look at the numbers. Income inequality in America is the highest that it's ever been in a half century. So how are these systems, how is our government and our economy working if we have the highest inequality that we've had in 50 years? Newsflash, they're not working. And so you know, when you just look at the data, that's why we need people in there who actually wanna build an economy and a government that actually works for the people, not for those at the top. I want to shift our conversation to just get your thoughts on the Bernie Sanders campaign, because
Do you mind if I talk a little about what you just said? Is that all right?
Oh, please. Yes. Please respond and then we'll shift. Yes, please.
Yeah. So I think one place that the left, that progressives have really failed, is simply in marketing. You know, you can have, like I've said and like I've seen, you can have the best product out there on the market. And if you don't market it, you don't make it look shiny, you don't appeal to people emotionally and make them believe that it affects them, then you have failed as a marketer. And what I've seen with a lot of these ideas is people label them as left or unrealistic. And when in reality, the only world that I have ever known, the only world that anyone under the age of 35 has ever known, is broken. Fundamentally right. Broken. But here's the deal. We have been here before as a country. We were here at the end of the last century. You had people like Teddy Roosevelt, who were Republican progressives, the strongest business people ever to be in office. And what did they say? Monopolies and corporate cartels and yep. trusts are killing capitalism. So if you believe in the free market, you should not be okay with Amazon. You should not be okay with Walmart. When you talk to people, and this is something for me, the original progressives were Republicans.
Ironically, yes. A lot of people don't know that.
When
they were.
When you frame that to a Republican now, you say, look, you care about a couple of things. You care about your family. You care about your values. And you care about whether or not you can live and die and whether or not you're responsible with what you have and what you've been given. And what has happened is we want to go back to that. 30 years ago, my grandparents, my extended family, they live in Iowa, rural Iowa, middle of nowhere, southwestern part. And 30 years ago, all of the small towns around them, they started to dry up. They started their centers of their towns collapsed. Their family-owned businesses, they moved out. And there was one reason. It was because a big company moved in
yep.
and it undercut all of their prices, drove them out of business, and then replaced those jobs with wages that earned half as much as what they were used to and what they originally had. And that money, it no longer stayed in the community. It left. And so yep. my grandfather's town in Harlan, Iowa, 30 years ago, they said, we've seen what has happened to all the towns around us. They have dried up. They have died. Because a company called Walmart has moved in and set up shop and undercut their prices, drove out their family businesses, and destroyed their way of life. And we're not going to let that happen here. And so that town is still there. Harlan, Iowa is still there. A lot of the other ones, they're not there anymore. Yep. Or they're shadows of what they used to be. And so when you talk to somebody who lives in a rural part of the country, when you talk to somebody who is a Republican, when you talk to somebody, we are the same. It doesn't matter what you call yourself. We are all living in the same thing right now. And the class struggle that you're talking about, we're yep. talking about basic economics, about whether or not for Republicans, they want a free market. They want to actually have capitalism. And what happened was in the 1990s, the 1890s, you had people like Teddy Roosevelt who came in and said, look, I am pro-business and I want business to survive. And I love the way that small towns and I love the way that our life goes, but it's being destroyed by people like J.P. Morgan. It's being destroyed by Rockefeller. It's being destroyed by these oligarchs and robber barons, and they are taking our money and destroying our way of life. And what I think the left
and the progressives have to do is go back to that. Because it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what race you are, what gender, what color. It does not matter. We are all struggling the same way, as you said. And the reason is we have to turn our anger, not amongst ourselves, and stop fighting amongst ourselves with people that look like us and have the same amount of money as we do. Stop fighting for scraps and start finding the people that are stealing it from us but telling us that we are the problem. And so you tell somebody like that in the rural part of the state here in Florida, and they're on board. Immediately on board. And basically what we are trying to do,
because you're campaigning in a Republican district, right? It's a Republican plus nine district, but you're running a pretty left campaign in that district, and you're hearing pretty good feedback from people on the ground.
Well, absolutely, because when you frame it in a personal when you frame it emotionally and personally with economics that work for people, where you say, look, Republicans and Democrats for 30 years have screwed you. They repealed Glass-Steagall. They have done everything as far as policy goes to hurt you. And right now, your town, it's dying. Your wages haven't gone up in 20 years. You are struggling to survive. And right here now, we're not voting against things in this next election. Yeah, we don't like Donald Trump, but guess what? He isn't the cause. He isn't the root of the issues. The root of the issues have been there for 30 years. And it's taken this long for people to realize that it doesn't matter what you look like. And they've been lied to. They've been told immigrants are the issue. They've been told that minorities are the issue. It is scapegoating.
Scapegoating.
What has happened now with this pandemic, and what I love and what I am seeing, is you are seeing people that they just want to live. They just want to start a business, to live in their community, to grow their town, and they can't. And what you're seeing with this pandemic is all of the systemic rotted issues that we have had for 30 years have just been exacerbated. And people are going to hurt now. I just saw the statistic that 53% of people under the age of 45 either lost their job, lost hours, or lost some sort of wages in the past 3 weeks. That's 53% of people that I know that can no longer pay their student loan debt. They can no longer pay for their mortgage or their rent. And guess what? That creates an opportunity for a left populist to come in and say, look, we don't care about the people who live somewhere else. We care about right here, our community, and whether or not we live and die. And that, when you say that as with populist economics, with left policies, by basically saying that, look, we're going to make capitalism fair again. We're going to make the free market fair. And we're going to make sure that you actually can have a job where you can live and survive. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter where you work. If you work 8 hours a day, you deserve to have a family. You deserve to have a home. And you deserve to have a little bit of money left over on the weekend so you can take your kid to the movie theater and not feel bad about it. And that's the pitch. That's the whole pitch.
Well, you tweeted something out, and everyone can follow him on Twitter. I'll give you his hashtag at the end, or his account at the end of the podcast. But you tweeted something the other day that I thought was so awesome. I put it in my notes right here. You said, do you want the sales pitch? Here's the pitch. If you work 8 hours a day, you should be able to afford a home, a family, and have a little money left over. I don't think that's very radical. Do you? You know, and that's it right there. And when we talk about capitalism, I think it's important to understand here is, in a free market, if we really had capitalism, because we're way above capitalism. I mean, we've gone into a plutocracy, into an oligarchy, because real capitalism means free markets. And in free markets, when a corporation fails,
You let them fail.
But in this system that we have, when you have a government that's been captured by these corporations and billionaires, what do corporations do at the first, when the pandemic happened? You know, the American people have been taught, well, we got to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, right? We need to save money for a rainy day. We have to have 3 to 5 months in savings. Well, these corporations don't. At the first sign of trouble, they cry out for socialism and they cry out for the government to save them, right? So I go back to what Martin Luther King Jr. said. He said that in America, we have socialism for the rich and we have rugged individualism for the poor. And it's so true that we have this, that we have a government right now. And what bugs me is the poor and the working class and the middle class have been carrying this nation on their back for the last four decades while the rich keep getting richer. For many Americans, the American dream is dead. And Trump and the GOP's giant tax giveaway to corporations and billionaires has only put it further out of reach. Democrats also haven't done enough. They've been content to remain centrist on economic policies. What is it going to take to revive the American dream and build an economy that works for everyone?
Well, you're
that's my question for you.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing it right now. You asked me about the Sanders campaign, and my first response to that is we don't have any saviors. People my age, people your age, people under the age of 45, we don't have saviors. We've never known what that is. What has happened is basically we have people in both parties that care more about the people that will give to their campaign so that they can get elected and go back to office over and over again and make it and feel good about themselves. And that's all they care about. And what happens is you disincentivize working people, you disincentivize students, you disincentivize anybody who has grown up since 2008 and their entire adult life has been since 2008. Look, we had a huge populist movement after 2008. You had Occupy Wall Street. You had this rage. You had all of these people that said, look, if we really do believe in capitalism, if we really do believe that the markets should determine themselves, supply and demand works, if this is really what we believe, why in the world are we not going to actually let the people who screwed up our lives pay the price? And what happened in 2008 is we refused. We refused to actually make the people, the hedge funds, the billionaires, all the people who gambled with our money. It's our money. Our savings accounts. They gambled with our savings accounts because we let the government split up or basically allow them to join together our savings accounts and their gamblers. And what happened was we got screwed. And then we had to pay twice. We had to bail them out afterwards. And people were pissed. Now imagine what's going to happen with this. Because what did Democrats actually fight for? Because I don't know. When you look at the phase three bill, I don't know what they fought for. I can't figure it out. A protection that maybe Trump can't have any money that comes out of it? Well, that already hasn't happened. When you're just fighting to get back to normal, you're never actually going to get ahead. And so what it takes is it takes people who have never known a time when things were great to say there needs to be a new vision and there needs to be somebody who stands up. When it comes to Bernie Sanders, he's one guy. 70-80% of people under the age of 35 voted for him, but they didn't vote for him as a person. They voted for him because of what he believed and the vision that he gave. And that vision does not stop with him. It does not stop with Elizabeth Warren. It does not stop with anyone. I read in an article this great analogy that Bernie Sanders is like a guy from a Bible story. It's something that we all grew up knowing. That when the Jews were in Egypt, they were slaves. And a man who was a coward, I mean, he did not have the ability to lead, but he was able to stand up to the people that were in power and lead the people out of Egypt. And it was not easy at that point. The Egyptians came after them. They had to fight. And then they wandered in the desert for 50 years. And finally, the guy goes up to the top of the mountain and he sees the promised land and sees what could have been achieved and sees what they had missed out on. But he's never actually able to go into it. And if you take that analogy and say, that's Sanders, he laid out the vision. He showed us where we could go. He didn't take us there, but it's going to take others to lead us actually there. And so what I am waiting for is somebody to stand up and say, look, we got here. We're standing here on the other side of the river, and all we got to do is cross. Because with this pandemic, what it has shown us is if one person doesn't have healthcare, none of us have health care.
That's right.
If one person can't survive on $7.25 an hour and they work at Walmart or they work at Kroger or Publix, then that hinders everybody else. Because if they are essential but they can't survive on what they are making, then they're not really essential. And so what I am seeing, especially here, is an appreciation and an understanding of what capitalism should have been or what it could be. You can call it democratic socialism. You can call it community capitalism. I don't care what you call it. Just frame it in a way that brings people along and says, this is the vision. This is where we want to go. This is what we want to achieve. We don't want to just get back to the way things were 3 to 4 years ago because they weren't great then. You have that famous line from the last election of, are you better now than you were when this person took office. And I would say, are we better now than we were 30 years ago? I don't think so. I wasn't even alive then, and I can tell you that. Like, we are back in the 1920s. Here in Florida, you see places like Hialeah. You see places here in rural Florida where they have to go and stand in line for hours, packed on top of each other, to get papers to file for unemployment, simply because the government that worked, supposed to work for them, could not create a competent system online on the website that did not crash. And what is happening? They're endangering their lives. They're endangering themselves simply because they care enough about their family to be able to try to survive. And that right there, that gives me hope. My hope was never in one person. My hope is never in one man or one woman. It is in whether or not people will do the right thing for themselves. And when you give people the option to do the right thing for their families and for themselves, and you show them that this will help you and you make them believe it, that's when things change. It's not simply by saying amorphously, we're fighting billionaires, or, oh, we're fighting giant companies. No, we're fighting people that are hurting you. And when you put it in personal terms, people understand it. And that, I think, is the opportunity, but also a major failure that the Democratic Party has had for a very long time. It is time to go back to the roots. It is time to go back to the people who, you know, are the backbone, who believe, who are people of faith, honestly, whether it's in God or whether it's in people themselves, that they want the world to be better. And so for here, for my campaign, like, that is what I've been preaching. And what happened was, within that 2 weeks after I got those 600 signatures, I reached out to a couple people, and they're like, you know what, we want to join. And within 2 weeks, we had 17 interns that joined us that are all under the age of 26. We just put out a couple more, and now we're at about 24. Like, we are growing, and nobody else is. We are organizing, but nobody else is. We are actually putting a vision and saying, look, these are the people that have screwed us, and these are the people that need to go away. And if you believe in capitalism, let the banks, let the airlines, let the cruise liners, let them fail. What happens is your workers will do better because of packaged bankruptcies. What happens is the speculators, the hedge funds, the billionaires, the people that are greedy and stole your money, they lose money. The people who work at those companies, they don't. Worst case scenario, those companies get broken up, there's more competition, and capitalism works. So let the free market decide whether or not you believe in the free market. If somebody does, there is an argument to be made that the free market would fix capitalism. I don't care if you believe that or not, but it's the way to bring people along, not necessarily say, I'm a socialist or I'm a capitalist.
Yeah, that's well said. I also think when we look at Bernie's campaign, I think his legacy, you put it pretty well. I think it isn't about one person. I think he showed us what is possible in politics. And he showed us that, you know, Joe Biden had that line during the campaign that he was talking with a bunch of donors, and he said that nothing will fundamentally change. You know, and now I can't believe he said it, but he did. But what Bernie was the opposite. What Bernie said is that, look, if you want change in America, if you want change that is going to real change, that is going to help everyday Americans, then you have to challenge the status quo. You have to shake up the system. And for years, our political system has been controlled by these powerful interests, because, newsflash, how do you run for office? When someone runs for office, they're not doing what you're doing. You know, when these more corporate-backed candidates, when these establishment candidates, the reason they don't build a grassroots campaign as you're doing is because they don't have to. Because they get check after check from corporate interests and special interests, so they can just take the big money checks, right? Throw some ads on television, then they get in Congress. Now, when it's very simple. When you take money from these big corporations who elect you, guess what? Those are the people who you're having campaign. Those are the people you're talking with. Those are the circles you're running in. So you get there, the lobbyists start knocking on your door, so you start representing them. But with Bernie, you know, he changed the way you can finance a campaign. He didn't take any of that kind of money. He only took $5, $10, $15 donations from everyday Americans. And when you take money from the people, those are the people you're going to represent, right? You're not beholden to these corporate and special interests. And that, to me, is the difference. We need people in Congress that will actually represent the people in their district. It's so simple. But, you know, we are supposed to have a government. Our Constitution says of, by, and for the people. Right now, we are of, by, and for the giant corporations, right? When these corporations fail and get bailouts, you know, but if people fail, we don't get bailed out. And so we've got to turn the whole thing on its head. And I think that, you know, Bernie didn't win the electability battle, but when you look at all the exit polling, Bernie won the ideological battle. The overwhelming majority of voters via the exit polling said they support Bernie's agenda. You know, they didn't vote for him. And I think that there was a lot of fear mongering involved. You know, for years, the right and the center of the Democratic Party has used so much fear mongering to demonize the left. But I think Bernie is, you know, it's like that old parable of, you know, the guy's chipping on the stone, and Bernie has put like 100, you know, breaks in the stone, and that next progressive is going to come along. Someone like you is going to come along, and all you got to do is hit it and the stone will break. You know, he's made it easier now for people to actually, you know, run a people-powered grassroots movement campaign, whereas 8 years ago that was unthinkable, right? That to me is his legacy, that he's revolutionized the way that we can finance campaigns and that we can run campaigns and we can run them strictly for the people.
He gave us hope. That's it. I mean, that is what he provided. He was not the perfect person. His messaging on a lot of things was flawed. He wasn't a revolutionary. He was a moderate at best, but he gave people hope. These are not radical ideas. This is not far left or far right. I consider myself a moderate, and yet I believe in getting rid of insurance companies. I consider myself a moderate, and yet I believe that it doesn't matter who you are, you should be able to have the right to have a decent life. Those are not radical positions, and even framing them as a revolution does a disservice because it's not a revolution. It may be a revolution for where we are, but in the scheme of things, it's not a revolution. And the thing is, you scare people when you don't make it personal, when you don't connect to them. And I think that was the biggest failing that I saw, because he created the single greatest campaign infrastructure. He completely changed the way that we're able to do things. Right. For me, it brought me off the sidelines. 4 years ago, I thought he was a crazy socialist guy with disheveled hair that I would never agree with ideologically. I would never see his side. I just wouldn't. And what happened was, I realized over 4 years running my own company that he was the only one who actually had ideas that could change my life. Mm-hmm. And so for me, health insurance for an employee is $12,000 a year. That kills small businesses. They can't survive. Right. You want a small business tax cut, you do Medicare for all.
Thank you. Wait, will you repeat that one more time?
If you want a small business tax cut, you do Medicare for all. If you want a middle class tax cut, you pass universal child care. If you want small businesses to grow and be started, you pass those two things. And guess what? People can take a risk. People now have the money to start their own company. People are no longer stuck in a dead-end job that they hate simply because they have insurance. And what it does is it frees up the market. It frees up your community to actually have a piece. I love starting new things. I love starting new companies. Why? Because it's mine. It is my baby. I get to run it. I get to start it. I get to push it forward. And everyone else feels the same way. And when you give more people that opportunity to feel like they have a piece of their community, they're not just living in it, that they actually have a say in how their life goes. They're just not going with whatever they're forced to. At that point, you have a world that people can actually enjoy and love and live in. And so when you frame these things, these moderate ideas and positions, frame them in a way that somebody that is conservative would love. Frame it as a middle class tax cut. Frame it as a small business tax cut, and explain to people that even if you are making $100,000 or $150,000 a year, you're still struggling. You can still reach those people. The people with 50 million or more, you probably won't reach. But anybody else, you can say you are running out of money at the end of the month, just like I am. And the reason is these people. And give them an enemy. Give them somebody to hate. But at the same time, do it knowing that it's actually good for the system that they love. And if you frame it as a thing that they love and that they can have a vision for their future and take it into their own hands with their own personal responsibility and say, we want a system where you get to do exactly what you're doing, Republican, Democrat, far right, far left, don't care. You have a shot. And it's the American dream, because right now we don't have an American dream.
We have whatever we've been forced to have. We have whatever products are on the market that we're able to skate by and convince people, despite the fact that they're fraudulent, that they are good enough. And I'm sick of good enough. I'm sick of the way that things have been my entire life. It can be better. And when you convince people it can be better, things change, man.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing here in Central Florida. That's what we're seeing across the country. And I thank Bernie Sanders for not being scared and being able to talk to everyone, not just a few. And so for me right now, the question is, and has been, the reason I got in the race, because I didn't have a choice. Both my companies right now, they're shut down. I have no source of income. My health insurance that I got 2-3 months ago, it's probably going to be gone in the next 2 or 3 months just because I can't afford it. The people that are working with me, they have student debt. They don't have a future. I still can't get a mortgage. I own two businesses. I'm doing quite well for myself. I'm done well enough to be able to save, to be able to last, not taking in anything for long enough to survive this thing out. But I know a lot of people are not as lucky as I am. And I am still struggling. And so for me, here in Florida, it's $10,000 to get on the ballot. We were going to reach the petitions. We were going to get there. The problem is we ran out of time and the pandemic hit.
Yep.
And what happened was the state of Florida has still not lowered that level. They're still going to require people to pay $10,000. And so I want to put my money where my mouth is. And if it comes down to it, I am going to scrape and do everything I can to save to get on the ballot because I believe in what we are doing. And we have a team of people that believe in what we're doing. And so for me right now, it's going to be a struggle, but we don't have a choice. If we really believe in these things and believe what we're saying, we have to be willing to sacrifice to do it. And that is what I am telling people that we meet, whether they're Republicans or whatever. You want a better world, you can have it. It takes a little bit of work, a little bit of effort, but once that is done, you deserve it.
I love that. You know, messaging is big, and I love what you're talking about on how, you know, what do progressives, because we're winning the ideological battle. Now we need to win the electability battle. And when you just took and you framed Medicare for All and universal childcare as a middle class tax cut, I mean, that like shifts the whole ballgame, because what people don't understand about these policies are designed to heal the deep levels of inequality and injustice in our society. That's the whole point of Medicare for All. I mean, Medicare for All, for some families, it'll save them up to $8,000 a year, and they'll have great medical care. Universal child care will save families as much as $10,000 a year. But the way sometimes we talk about these policies, that's $18,000 a year for a middle-class family.
Now, what did I say was the average income here in Gainesville?
You said it was $20,000.
You basically double people's
you
money.
Double people's overnight. Income. Right. But the disconnect, well, there's a couple things. As progressives, remember, we're not just fighting Republicans. We're also fighting the corporate establishment and the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, right? So, and we're fighting the corporate media apparatus. So yeah. That's a lot of fear-mongering thrown our way. But when you just reframed Medicare for All as a middle-class tax cut, it's brilliant, because the truth has this way of rising to the top. And that's been, you know, that was Bernie's whole campaign, is that for years, our government told us basically to settle for crumbs. And these corporations, you know, look, the minimum wage hasn't increased in America in over a decade. The minimum wage is $7.25. People cannot survive on that. You know, it should be double that. You know, if not, it should be $20. And we're looking and we're seeing the people right now who society are carrying society on their back, right? These essential workers at Walmart and at grocery stores, where some of them aren't even making $15 an hour. And, you know, and we're seeing they're the essential ones. Whereas billionaires, they're not an essential worker. I mean, that's one of the things this pandemic has shown us. These billionaires are not essential, right? We don't need them for society to exist, you know, in some ways. So, you know, we've got to keep shaking the table. We've got to keep challenging the status quo. If we don't challenge the status quo, nothing will get better for working people. And so when people like you come out here and you come from a conservative background and you're talking about, you know, Bernie Sanders policies and making those work in a community like yours, that to me is so hopeful, you know, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be the anti-Trump party. You know, we tried that in 2016. Just being the anti-Trump party, it wasn't enough. You have to give people something to vote for. You can't just give them something to vote against. But vote against some of the resistance.
You vote against things and you'll lose every time. We tell this to people. So I coach high school soccer. I have for a while. I actually coached in college a little bit. But you never tell your team to go out not to lose. What do you say?
You play to win.
You play to win. And you give them the opportunities and the skill set and the ability to do that. And you give them the vision and the goals and the future. And that propels people. You tell them just to go out and try not to lose. What do you think is going to happen?
Absolutely. Well, it's called play, you know, you're trying to play it too safe. But that's what the Democratic Party has become over the last two decades, that people have been convinced that we have to compromise our progressive values to win national elections. And the way I look at it is, no, we don't have to compromise our values. We have to fight for our values. If you don't believe in your values, how are you going to make somebody else believe in your values? But this is what's happened with Washington. And we have consultants that come up with stuff like Medicare for All who want it, when it really is just a public option, right? They means test policies. So instead of actually fighting for our values and fighting for these big, bold policies, they want to compromise before they're even at the table with the Republican Party. And that's just not going to work. The other part of it is, when you're campaigning, the entire point of a campaign is to be aspirational. You're supposed to be big and bold in a campaign. You're not supposed to already be like playing it timid and playing it safe and playing it easy. But this is what's happened. And look, Donald Trump is such a divisive figure. I'm definitely not going to be supporting him. I will eventually support the nominee, but I'm not just going to give a free pass to Joe Biden. Like, Joe Biden has to earn my vote. He has to actually show me that he's going to go out there and fight for something. Just not being Donald Trump is going to give us the same result we had in 2016. Yet me saying that is radical. There's going to be a ton of moderate Democrats that are just, oh, I can't believe you said Joe Biden has to earn your vote and he has to compromise and meet the left in the middle. Guess what? Hillary Clinton did not reach out to the left and did not compromise. And guess what? She lost. So if, you know, there's an old saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. We are running the same playbook. Joe Biden is running this exact same playbook that Hillary Clinton ran. And we're going to get the same result. And so it falls on, that's why as a progressive activist, I've been challenging his campaign. Look, support Medicare for All. Support, you know, universal college. Support universal childcare. You know, support these policies that will give a middle class tax cut, like you said. Don't settle for the status quo, because that's what got us into this mess. And the same thinking that got us into this mess isn't the thinking that's going to get us out of this mess. We need bold, visionary thinking.
So the reason I think that some of the policies that Joe Biden and some of the bills that Joe Biden has written and gotten passed previously, they have not worked for people like me. And here's why. When you frame things in a small business perspective or frame them in a business perspective, it makes it real for a lot of people who imagine that one day they could own a business. When you walk into a negotiation with an investor, you ask for more than what you expect them to ever give you. And right. When you ask for more, what you really wanted seems like a compromise. And
thank
so the
you.
Compromise is whatever you land at. When you walk into a negotiation or a sale or a business decision, you always have things on the table that are expendable to you that you don't necessarily care about, but you're willing to give up. Because when you give them up, it looks like you're coming to their side. And you know what? Mitch McConnell has been great at this.
Yep.
It is why Democrats have lost. It's because Democrats, if they really wanted Medicare for All, they would start with a nationalized healthcare system. If they really wanted the ACA, they would have started with Medicare for All. If they really wanted a public option, they would have started with Medicare for All, no public option. All insurance companies gone, and they didn't. They started with a public option, and that was what they said they wanted. And what happened? Lieberman tanked it. And what happened? You had people who were celebrating afterwards, despite the fact that all they did was push some people, push the ability for healthcare change a few years down the road when it just got a little bit worse. And so what we see is when you take a Mitt Romney right-wing plan and say, this is what we want, and then they go farther right from there because they push you because they're better negotiators because you clearly don't know how to negotiate, you lose. And so what you have to have is people that come in and say, this is what I want, and actually be decent negotiators.
Well, you don't negotiate while you're campaigning, right? We're not even at the negotiating table yet with Republicans.
That's the starting point.
Right. I always tell people, if you campaign on Medicare for all, we'll probably end up with a public option. But if you're like Joe Biden and you campaign on a public option, we'll end up with nothing.
Yeah.
And this speaks to a bigger issue that I think too often in the Democratic Party, we have put our elected officials on pedestals, and instead of understanding that they work for us, right? So what you had just said a little bit ago, Adam, about demanding more, right? That we need to demand more out of our government, more out of capitalism, more out of our economy, more out of these corporations. That to me strikes at the heart of this. Like, our politicians have to earn our votes, right? That is their job. And when you treat public servants, you know, as, you know, kings and queens, and that they're above reproach, that ends up in this, in the system we have now, where it works very well for the people at the top, and not for those of us, you know, who are struggling. So I think that to me is that big disconnect, that like, it's okay to demand more from your elected officials. It's okay to demand more from a candidate who's running for president or running for Congress, right? That's part of democracy, is demanding more from your elected leaders.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. I think that one thing that people are starting to realize is that politics typically shouldn't be a personality contest. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be who is the nicest, who will get along the best. To be honest, we want the people that are absolute jerks who will fight for what we want and will never give up. I mean, everyone hates people like Mitch McConnell, right? They hate him to their bones, but you got to respect him because they believe in what they believe and they're willing to do anything and everything to achieve it. And for people like you, for people like me, for anyone who is here, especially in Central Florida, we know that we're not going to have saviors. We know nobody's going to come and help us or save us. And so we have to do it ourselves. And so for me, I cannot and will not take money from corporate PACs. I cannot and I will not run in a way that I am more beholden to giant corporations and donors and people who are not going to change anything than I am to the person who lives next to me in the other apartment across from me, despite the fact that they have given me no money to run. That is who I'm fighting for. That is who we should be fighting for. And so for me, when you run a campaign, right now, it's that famous saying. It's the famous saying from AOC and from Ryan Grimm. It's, they've got the money, but we've got the people.
Right.
And so for me, right now, obviously the hurt is coming with the pandemic. But for me right now, we have to raise the 10 grand or at least help so that it doesn't absolutely kill me and I'm living on the street to be able to get on this ballot within the next 15, 16 days. I will do it. I will downsize. I will do whatever I have to do to be able to get to that point where I put my money where my mouth is and actually show people that I am not afraid to do this. And I don't think anyone should be afraid to do this. Florida has one of the highest, highest hurdles and hoops to jump through in order to get on the ballot to run in the first place. It's almost 10 times more expensive than California and New York. The petitions are 5 to 6 times higher. I mean, it's just one of those things where they try to make sure that normal people can't run. And the people we're running against on the other side, they're the same people that got the last guy elected. One is the campaign manager for the last guy that went up there. And what did he just do? He just voted in Congress against the anti-lynching bill and basically said that lynching was a state's right.
Mm.
And we're running the person who is the leader on the Republican side is the campaign manager, the person who got him elected and was his policy person. And she is running the exact same campaign. And what we see is that it doesn't matter who the face is in Washington. It doesn't matter what the person's name is. It doesn't matter what their picture looks like. If you never change the actual power structure, the people that put them there,
yep,
nothing will ever change. So you can put in term limits all you want. Doesn't matter. won't change a dang thing unless you actually fix the people that are in power and determining how they're voting. That's the only thing that'll change things. And so for me, the people that I want lighting a fire under my butt every single day are the people like my neighbors, are the people that own small businesses, are the people that live here and not just have a multinational company that is everywhere. And so for me right now, that is the biggest challenge, but also I think the biggest opportunity. And so for me, this is so much fun. I know most people are like, you're running for office. You must be insane. Maybe I am. I don't know. I don't think I am. But to be honest, like, I am loving this. Why? Because I get to talk to people. We get to share ideas. We get to bounce stuff off of each other. We get to try to create something new. And what I've loved about just this whole experience is just I am seeing the good in so many people that I never would have before. And I am seeing this hope and this vision, even in the darkest of times. Because like what? The dawn is right after the darkest part of the night is when the dawn comes or something.
Yep. It's always darkest before the dawn.
It's something like that.
Yep. Well, we reached the end of the show. So Adam, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and for getting out there and for running for office and running on left issues in a Republican district. That is pretty freaking awesome. If you guys want to help him raise that $10,000 so he can get on the ballot, you can go to forthemanynotjustme.com. That is forthemanynotjustme.com. And you can go and chip in $5, $10. I know times are tough, so only give what you can. Also, if you want to follow Adam on social media, you can follow him on Twitter at AC4Congress2020. So thanks again for listening to another episode of Amped Up with Proud Resistor. I hope everyone's staying safe in the pandemic, and we'll catch you next week with an all new episode.